This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm truly delighted to welcome a Canadian comedy legend to the program, Robin Duke. This iconic Canadian actress and comedian has enjoyed and is enjoying a year that has so far spanned 5 decades, and she has been one of the anchors at the heart of the Canadian comedy scene since she first started taking classes at Second City over 50 years ago. This, of course, led to an incredible career writing and performing comedy at Second City Theatre in Toronto and much more. Since then, she has written and performed on television's SCTV, working with some of the greatest comedic superstars such as Eugene Levy, Gilda Radner, Martin Short, and of course, her lifelong best friend, Catherine O'Hara, whom she became besties with in grade 9, and they've been BFFs ever since. Then came the inimitable Saturday Night Live, where she created memorable characters and sketches, the Whiners and Mr. and Mrs. T's Bloody Mary mix. At SNL, she was not only a cast member, and this is an important distinction, but a writer too, and that gig lasted an impressive 4 years. Of course, you're going to recognize her from her unforgettable portrayal of Wendy Kurtz from the Blouse Barn on Schitt's Creek, which, as many of you know, is my favorite show of all time. Most recently, she appeared in the CTV CSA-nominated half-hour comedy series Shelved, and I watched it the other night till 3 a.m, and she's fabulous in that as well. She appeared for 3 seasons on FX Hulu's Man Seeking Woman. She's hilarious in that too. Her film work includes the classic Harold Ramis comedy Groundhog Day, in which Robin plays Doris, the waitress, starring Bill Murray and Andy McDowell, as well as his other films, Club Paradise, Stuart Saves His Family, and Multiplicity. Robin continues to write with, perform, and co-produce the all-woman comedy troupe, Women Fully Clothed. Since 2004, WFC have successfully toured Canada, the U.S., and the Edinburgh Fringe Festival to sold-out houses and rave reviews. Now retired as a professor and full-time faculty in the comedy program at Humber College for 19 years, she taught everything from sketch, writing, performing, improv, to Canada's up-and-coming comedy stars. She also, if that's not enough, completed a master's of fine arts degree in creative nonfiction at King's College in Halifax and plans to complete her memoir, My Funny Life and Improvising Through It, by 2024. Her awards, very briefly, include a star on Canada's Walk of Fame for her work on SCTV, an Emmy nomination for writing on SNL, a Canadian Screen Award for her ensemble work with Shelved, the David Broadfoot Comic Genius Award, and the John Candy Award, not to mention an Innovator of the Year Award with Humber College. On a lighter note, she also has her grade 2 Royal Conservatory Theory and Piano, and she enjoys quilting. But in all seriousness, Robin Duke, everyone, is just one of those people who is an anchor and a cornerstone in the landscape of Canadian comedy. And through it all, she has stayed kind, grounded, humble, and always funny. She has enjoyed the kind of longevity in the business that you can only dream of. I can't wait to introduce y'all to her. So without further ado, Robin Duke, longest bio ever in the history of bios. Welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you. Oh, I'm exhausted. Who is that person? Oh my heavens. Wow. That was lovely. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks. So well deserved. Robin, I have literally been living, breathing, and studying your career for weeks. And I think I've made my team crazy cuckoo, but you really are so prolific and yet so chill about it all. And I'd love to go back to grade 9, where it all began in Etobicoke at Bermanthorpe Collegiate Institute, which you attended with Catherine O'Hara, and you became fast friends, lifelong best friends, sitting at the back of the class doing shows together. And I just understand what that's like to find a like-minded, funny person, right? It's the best feeling.
Oh, it was the best. It was the best. Only my family, you know, people in my family were the ones that really make you laugh from your heart and your gut. And all of a sudden, there was this gal sitting next to me who was doing, I like to say, you know, impersonations of, oh, golly, Paul Lynde, James Mason. I could go on, but she would be doing these impersonations and we just would be laughing at the back of the class. She was great at, you know, impersonating the teachers. And so she would be doing, oh, we just hit it off like that. It was so great. And we still do. Nobody makes me laugh harder than Catherine.
Oh, I love that.
Such silly little things, you know?
And you did so many fun things thanks to Mrs. Eagle, your theater arts teacher. Oh. And we all need a teacher like her, right? Who you wrote a musical together based on old songs and you played two movie stars and you said it was stupid and fun. And what was that like? It just sounds like it was a hoot.
Well, we like to listen to old songs on the radio, you know, and that was really, I would think, Catherine's family's influence. And so we knew all these songs. And so we decided to write a play around it. And her brother was in it and his best friend were in it. And Catherine and I had found two blonde wigs. And we were kind of Marilyn Monroe competing. Fremont. So we just created these roles and once again laughed, and then we decided we would give awards to each other. So we had an award ceremony and we did the play. Great. But you mentioned Mrs. Eagle. She would let us just go wild at Burnham Thorpe. We could do whatever we wanted. Oh. It was called the May Show, and every room in the high school at Burnham Thorpe was converted into some kind of theater. Kind of reminded me a bit, you know, when I think about it now, of the Edinburgh Festival. Really? Where they would transform closets into stages. And you could do whatever you wanted. She was just this free spirit and let us go and play.
Oh, and so it was fabulous.
Best. It was just so much fun. So we did.
And even before that, I think you always had a funny bone. And I'm just wondering, as a kid, I know your dad was very funny. Your mom had a great sense of humor. And you would stand in front of the TV watching Jack Benny and laughing your head off. And you didn't even understand a lot of the jokes, but you loved the faces that he made.
Mm-hmm.
What was it, even as a little kid, that you think you just sort of knew this might be your area, your calling?
Gee, I think it's the response that you get. I like to get a laugh. I like to get attention. And when I was in, I think it was in grade one or kindergarten, that I was chosen to be the angel in the Christmas play. And I didn't have a line. All I had to do was hold up an apple at the end of the play. And they would bring me out behind some kind of box, and then I would appear at the end of the play. And my mother said that it was over two nights. She said the first night, you know, I did the apple thing. She said the second night I was like up there with the apple and performing, you know. So I got in the bug on the first night with the applause and thought, okay, this is good.
The year after, you were the elf with the mustache, and you didn't like that as much. You love
You know, backstage, well, not backstage, but they said, who wants a mustache? And I'm putting up my hand. My mother had curled my hair all nice. And then I'm on stage with curls and a mustache.
Oh, my God.
That's basically
oh my God.
Me in a nutshell. That's all you need to know. Curls in a mustache.
I love it. I'm getting the picture. The funny bone was always there. Mm-hmm. And now it's the 70s and Second City has just come to Toronto. And I so vividly remember that Fire Hall Theater. I can picture it and remember it so well.
Yeah,
and you were going to university at the time and you would go and watch improv sets at night. And of course, Joe Flaherty was in the cast and mm-hmm. Eugene Levy and Gilda Radner and Dan Aykroyd. And then they offered improv classes Saturday mornings for 3 hours at $10 a pop with Joe Flaherty. You took improv classes with Joe Flaherty. Oh my God. What was that like? And how would you describe those days?
Oh, they were glorious. I mean, it was all so new. Comedy was new. I mean, in Toronto, there was nothing as far as good comedy. I mean, I don't mean to diss other comedy, but this was relevant, hip, irreverent, satirical. There was acting. There was characters. There was drama. There was everything going on. And you were doing it spontaneously. You were writing on your feet, writing scenes with characters.
Wow.
And finishing scenes. You know, you would go out in a scene, and this is what I would learn from Joe Flaherty and John Candy. You would go out, you would start a scene, and you would have to finish what you started.
Mm.
So it was thrilling. It was just thrilling. It was inspiring, creative.
Oh.
It was amazing. It was a great way to express yourself, what went on in the day, to express emotions, to act out what had happened to you in the day or what you'd seen that had made you laugh, a character that you might have seen that had, you know.
Oh, it's like therapy. It's like therapy. It's catharsis. And you love live, Robin. I know that you've said this. Sometimes you almost felt the camera's getting in the way. I want to be with my audience and in it. Right? Yep. And this was live with the best of the best, which you've always had in your career. That's another interesting, we get to that later on. But just, but anyway, beautiful, beautiful period. And then, if it could not get any better, it did. You joined the SCTV cast. I mean, this is like heady stuff. This is not, you know, for all comics out there, this is like, this is big stuff. And you joined the cast in the early 80s, working alongside Joe and Andrea Martin and Rick Moranis and these comedy geniuses. How would you describe those years doing SCTV? Like, this was cool. There were a few little theater troupes out there doing little sketch things.
Yeah.
But this was like being in the cool group, right?
Well, you know, you didn't really know it as that. It just seemed like, oh, well, this is the next step. Not to be, what do I want to say? But there was nothing like this existed.
Yes.
So it just seemed natural. Now I do SCTV. There wasn't, trust me, there was no competition. I had no competition. If I tried out for Second City Today or SCTV or Saturday, I wouldn't get it.
Oh, yes, you would.
I don't think I would. I think, for one thing, I didn't have to audition. Everything I have done, most of the things I've done, I've never had to audition.
Crazy.
So it was just people knowing my work and saying, pushing me forward, Catherine encouraging me and supporting me. So I was just sort of the next in line. I'd had that experience on stage and here you go.
But was it a trip to be on SCTV? Like, were you, did you say during that period, pinch me, this is, even though you didn't quite have the context yet, did you sort of recognize, wait a minute, I'm a funny person. I've just landed this fabulous gig where I get to be funny and be creative with these fabulous people around me. Like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess. But as I say, it just seemed like
normal.
Not normal, but it just seemed like, well, this is it. This is what it'll always be. This is what it is.
Yes.
And it's going to continue. This is just what's
wow. I love it. I know. For me, it's just like, oh my God, it's a wow.
But then, you know, I have to preface that with like, well, you know, there was some drinking going on, Judy, during those years. So, you know, that was that.
We've all been there, right? We've all been there.
Bit of a fog. But anyway, I guess I felt like I was working with people that I really respected and that I wanted to learn from.
Yes.
And I wanted to be around and laugh. Certainly, you know, I mean, Deb Devine, who is Eugene Levy's wife, has this great line where she says, go where the laughs are.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what I've done. I've gone where the laughs were. Yes. And I've been very fortunate that those doors have been open for me to do that. very fortunate. So I got to laugh, you know. I got
so
to
great.
And nothing's so better too than making like Joe Flaherty laugh, or you know, if you could make John Candy laugh.
Eddie Murphy, your favorite person to make laugh. Oh. And he laughed. You made him laugh. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
He really laughs, and that is the best feeling, that laugh of his. So I've been very lucky.
Then Martin Short came in to replace John Candy. And what did you think, like, when you first saw his comedy stylings? Like, did you just go, guy's good?
I loved it. It was great. It was like, he was doing things. He really brought a different energy, certainly, to the mix. Yes. With his characters, they were all grounded in reality. He was always doing somebody that he knew, but he could just explode them and make them big and crazy. But there was just that grounding to them and that truth where everybody, you knew somebody like that.
Yeah.
You knew that person. Or he was doing you in some way, shape, or form.
That's crazy.
Recognized yourself in those characters.
That's so cool. And then one of the biggest doors opened. You got one of the biggest breaks ever, again, in a very chill way, not in the way that people get it today, but you got hired at Saturday Night Live. You didn't even have to audition, as you said. Catherine was there supporting you. You said she always paved the way for you. And you met Dick Ebersol, who was then replacing Lorne Michaels.
Yeah.
And Joe Flaherty came into the room, helped in hiring you. And this is kind of the stuff that legends are made of, even though it happened in such a chill way. Can you tell us what happened that day after you spent 2 hours there? You're wandering around with Catherine. You're meeting all these people. And finally, Catherine goes, come on, let's go. We've got to get a decision here. Like, oh, my God. It takes a lot of confidence on both of your parts, right?
Oh, my gosh. It's crazy. I wish I had that confidence now. I just,
youth, right? Youth, you do these things.
It's always, as I say, it's always going to be like that. There's always going to be another Saturday Night Live or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, Catherine really had that. She just had such a great attitude, like a knowledge of what she wanted, what she didn't want. And she expected, I think she expected that from me. Too, you know, that way of thinking. I may not have been as confident as Catherine or as sure of myself or as talented.
Oh,
as
come
Catherine.
On.
But, she was the one, she said, go and knock on his door and tell him we've got to go.
I love that.
Yeah, I know. And so I did. Sure, Catherine. All right. And then I did. And he said, okay, you're in.
Oh,
and I, you know, I taught for almost 20 years, and my students every year would ask me, you know, what was my audition like?
It's like there was no audition. There wasn't an audition. But something happened that was very unusual, and it happened twice for you. You were not only a cast member on SNL, you were also a writer, and you had the same distinction on SCTV, and that's pretty unheard of. So you can say, this is big stuff to have those two roles. And I can't even imagine what it was like to be in that writer's room at SNL. Because I've heard so much about that writer's room. It's like, I know there's something very mystical about what it is. What does it look like? Can you paint us a picture of what happens in the writer's room?
Well, it's more, when I was there at Saturday Night Live, it's more offices. You know, everybody had their own office. So you would kind of go from office to office and see what people were working on and if there was anything in it for you.
Wow.
So oftentimes, you know, in that first year, there wasn't a lot for me or for any, you know, any of the women in the cast. So that's why I started writing. And I'd written, you know, basically, as I said before, from the stage and improv, I'd written on my feet. So it wasn't that difficult to take that knowledge of a scene or a sketch and just write it down.
Right.
As opposed to improvising it. Except when you're writing by yourself mostly, but you bring those improv skills into a writer's room.
Right.
The yes and the adding on and the the character, the voices.
Wow. But it's a huge skill. Like, it's just something that a lot of people don't have. They get paralyzed when they have to write and to write funny. And you just were doing it. And it's almost like you flexed that comedy writing muscle, maybe at SCTV. Was that part of it, that it came more easily to you because you had done it? You had practiced it.
Yeah,
and the whiners happened, the Wendy Weiner and the Weiner sketch. And that happened because you and one of the cast members were walking around whining. I don't know.
It was like what I said earlier was, you know, we would go from office to office. So Joe and I were, I guess, one night going from office to office and nobody was writing for us. So we just started whining and making fun of it, of ourselves, and escalating these silly voices until, oh, these are characters. So that night I went home and I wrote that idea down on foolscap. You can imagine those days, because we didn't have computers.
Of course.
And brought it in the next day to the production office where they type up what you've written, because, as they say, we don't have computers. And handed it in. But it wasn't in the read-through because the head writer couldn't find the jokes in it. So I had to convince him to let us read it at the table read.
Yes.
And it went over.
And it went over big. Yes. What was it like living in New York, Robin, at the time? Oh. My daughter's there. My daughter's an actor and a singer, but not a comedian, but she is. And she's just doing some beautiful things and starting to, she graduated from NYU and she's starting to work and loving it. Was that a fun time living in New York?
Oh, fun and expensive.
Yes. You know,
so expensive. How expensive?
It's crazy.
Very, and you know, I was making a good living.
Yes.
And even, you know, it was like, whoa, how are people living here?
I know, eh? Oh, God. Oh, God.
So I loved living there. But on the weeks off, my husband and I would drive back to Toronto.
Yeah.
And we would have like maybe 2 weeks off at a time or a week. So whenever I had time off, I'd come home.
You were very crazy about the 21-year-old Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, yeah.
With her little jeans and her little t-shirts and her and her bravado, right? Her excessive confidence. Can you tell us about that? And you wrote sketches with her, you performed with her, you got to know her. That's pretty cool. What was it about Julia? Like, she just sort of at 21 believed in herself.
Oh, she just had that attitude, you know? Yeah. Like, it was like a F you attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't need this.
Yeah, so good.
You know, she just, you know, that was Julia. She was great. Breath of fresh air.
Yes.
And just that unbelievable confidence.
Yes.
And she also, you know, she had her husband there with her. So that helped, you know.
Of course.
Brad was there and she came in with a group of people. So she had that power behind her that way. But she was also very smart. Mm. She was one of the first people to get a publicist.
Wow. Interesting. You know?
Yes. Smart. It was very interesting. It's like, what?
What is that? What the hell's that? That's very. You wrote a song for you and Julia to sing to Jeff Bridges when he appeared on the show.
Oh God, yeah, Guy Crazy.
Do you remember it?
Yes, yeah. It was just pardon.
Do you remember it?
Oh yeah. I know there's a guy for me who'll understand. I'm Guy Crazy. Gotta be cute. He's got to be smart. He's got to, because shoot. I'm Guy Crazy. That's
okay. I'm gonna find it. I'd love to find that if it exists and play it on the show.
Yeah.
They were tumultuous years, Robin, at SNL, but you were there doing the incredible work that you'd done at SCTV, being the cast member, being the writer, doing these wonderful Wendy Weiner sketches and with Piscopo, which you did 10 times. Other characters, tell us about that.
Oh, just that I'd done it 10 times.
Yes.
Well, you know, I wrote the original one, and what happens in the writing world, and maybe just at Saturday Night Live, is once you write a piece, the head writers would take it over. They could take it over, and they would write up any whiners, P piece that a host might want to do. The host would come in and say, you know, I like those minor characters. I want to do something with them. Yes. So then the head writers would take on that piece and writing it. So, wow. So I had very little to do with writing them after that.
Wow. That's it. You played other characters like the trash talking Olivia Newton-John fanatic Paulette Clooney. What was she like? What do you remember? But did you love that character?
Oh, yeah. I mean, she was, you know, just she came from a scene that Tim Kazurinsky and I wrote, which was about, you know, if you broke up with a guy and the girl that he went out with was like so far from who you were.
Yeah.
And that's what I was. So that's where the character
that's
came
so
from.
So funny.
As low rent as possible.
Where do you dream these up? Are you the person with the little notepad beside your bed on your bedside table and you wake up at 3 a.m. and go, yes, this is it? Where do these ideas come to you?
Yeah, where do they come from? Yeah, from life.
From life.
From just from life. Thoughts that go through your mind.
Yeah.
You know, it might be from like, what? He's with her now?
Right.
Yes. So then that clicks and you go, oh, there's a scene there.
So cool.
There's a scene idea or a character.
You've also done many impressions. You made two appearances as the blonde mohawk, Mrs. T, and you impersonated Eva Braun, Sherry Lewis, Louise Mandrell, Shelley Winters. And you're great at impersonations. I know you said you can start learning how to do them from your parents, like just watch your parents, watch people at home. But like I always say, I'm great at impersonating my friends Marcy and Mary Lawless, but no one knows them, so it doesn't work. How do you do impersonations? What's the trick or the secret? Actually, Robin, don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, FM 96.7. And just before the break, Robin, I asked you what your secret is or your trick is to doing impressions.
Really, Judy, I'm not great at it. So much of it is having a good ear.
Yeah.
And really having a control of your voice.
Yes.
I think, and just those two. You know, I was watching Meryl Streep on Only Murders in the Building, and I thought, I know why she's so good. It's her voice.
Wow.
It's her voice. It's all the range and what the ability she has. She does it all with her voice.
Yes.
It's as simple as that. I mean,
interesting.
So cool. And I'm not, you know, as you can tell, my voice is kind of shot, and I wish I'd known more about voice as I was growing up.
Yes.
You know, in the business, I wish I'd studied it or understood it, because I know how valuable it is to be able to control it. But
your voice is you. Like Simon Cowell always says, I love when I hear a singer and they're recognizable. And that's what's so delightful and lovable about you, is we know your voice. So whether you're playing, you know, the character in Shelf, which we're going to talk about in a minute, or whether you're playing Wendy or all these. Anyway. All right. There's so many things. You leave after 4 years and you start getting parts in major films and TV series. You act with huge superstars like Robin Williams and Martin Short and Bill Murray. And we have to talk about Groundhog Day, because you played Doris, the waitress. Like, when I was telling my husband about this interview and I was telling him who you are, and he's like, oh yeah, I remember her from this and from that. I said, well, don't you know that Robin was also in Groundhog Day? He's like, oh my God, that's my favorite movie of all time. Were you blown away by the reaction to this film that has really become like a mainstay in comedy films everywhere, right?
Like, isn't it amazing? And I always say, like, if you were going to be in a film, you know, that's the one to have done.
Yes, yes.
And it was like a Brigadoon, you know, just going to Woodstock in Chicago. And we were all just, you know, this great cast all sort of together doing this incredible movie. Sometimes there's just a light around stuff. It was like that for Hostage for a Day, too, with John Candy. There was a light around it.
Wow.
And there was kind of just an energy, I don't know, a shared spirit, something that was happening with Groundhog Day.
You had a Groundhog Day cast reunion this past year. What was that like?
Oh, it was fantastic. Oh, my heavens. You know, I got put up in a hotel and my husband and I. And I got to see Brian Doyle Murray, who is like just the funniest person ever. And I got to see, you know, old friends, people I had worked with on the film. And I went out for dinner with Erica, who's Harold's wife. Erica and I go way back. So it was just great to reconnect with her, have this great dinner in Chicago at a steakhouse.
Fun. Doesn't get any better. What was Bill Murray like to work with?
You know, I have to say Bill was unbelievably professional. Mm-hmm. We had a read through for Groundhog Day and he knew all his lines.
Wow.
I had like 7 lines maybe and I didn't know them. And I realized as I was reading them that he was looking at me because he wanted to engage.
Your reactions, yeah. You're like, sorry, Bill, not yet.
And he was also very generous in helping me understand how the camera worked and talked to me after the scene and explained why he had shifted me around like he had so that I could be facing the camera and that I was in the shot so that I wouldn't be cut out of the shot.
Love that. Yeah, I love that. That's very generous. That's very, very generous and
very generous,
outward focused. And wow, that's so, well, you're just fabulous in that, like beyond. And I got to tell you something. I find it so cool that many of your characters are named Wendy. And we'll get to that in a minute, but you've played a lot of Wendy's. And let's start with my favorite Wendy of all, Wendy Kurtz in Schitt's Creek. So Robin, I've watched Schitt's Creek 400 times. I've had Andrew Barnsley on this show for the full hour as well. And I loved your portrayal of Wendy from the Blouse Barn, who gave David his first job. And I read that because you've known him all your life, because you're best friends with Deb Devine, Eugene's wife, and Eugene, you kept calling him Daniel in the scenes because you're so used to calling him by his real name. What was it like to work with all of your buddies, Catherine, Eugene, Daniel, Sarah, and even to reunite with Chris Elliott from Groundhog Day?
That was great.
So fun. What was it like to work on that show?
Well, it was fantastic. You know, I just had one day with Eugene and Chris, and that was fun. I didn't have any scenes with Catherine, which was very disappointing. She came by, though, to watch a couple of the scenes that I was doing, which was sweet. And, it was just, you know, a good feeling. You just felt the support. It was like the old days on Second City, SCTV, where everybody's, you know, together trying to make the best out of something.
Yes. Yes. You felt everybody's that.
Everybody's working on the same little, it could be just a moment, but the focus is on that moment.
Yeah.
So there was that element and, you know, of course, working with Daniel was just so silly.
Little baby Daniel. He'd known since he was born, right?
And they did. They had to keep cutting because I said, I'm calling him Daniel. But it was lots of fun. It was a real, and oh my God, people love that show.
I can't tell you. I think it got everyone through the pandemic. And I'm telling you, even when I'm ever just, and I need to just really relax and just feel good and just unwind, I just tune in. I've seen it so many times. I know all the lines by heart. I think it's better. You're not going to believe that I'm going to say this. It's going to sound like, you know, hyperbole that I'm doing here, but I find it's better than MASH. I find it's better than All in the Family. And you're not going to believe what I'm about to say. I think it's better than the Dick Van Dyke Show. What? I think it's sorry, I love Dick Van Dyke and I love Mary Tyler Moore, but I think it's one of the best shows of all time. And I'm just wondering, did you know at the time that you were doing it that this is going to have legs from here to, to Timbuktu?
No.
Wow.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not those kinds of legs. You know, you can play a little bit. But that popular, I mean, what has ever been as popular as that? Nothing.
Nothing.
Can't imagine. But all those, you know, of course they had the luxury of having witnessed all those shows like Dick Van Dyke and were obviously pulling on them, drawing on those elements that made those shows successful. So
will there be a Christmas reunion or a little spin-off or a little reunion show?
Oh, I love a spinoff of Wendy Kurtz. And there's so many things that could happen.
Me too. I want to come work there in the barn. it's incredible. And I have to ask you, so again, and I don't know if the audience is noticing this through line. When you think about it, everything you've done has always been the best in comedy, whether it was SCTV, SNL, Schitt's Creek that we've just mentioned, to movies like Groundhog Day, just ask my husband, Cliff, Dr. Liebrack, and so much more. Whatever you do, you seem to have that Midas touch, and you choose well, or it chooses you. I don't know.
It chooses me. I'll do anything, Judy. I'll do anything as long as I don't have to audition.
I know, auditioning sucks. Self-tapes are better, aren't they?
They are.
You get to do it.
I got shelved from a self-tape.
Self-tape.
But the writing was good on shelved. The writing was, it was there.
Did you just say you got shelved from a self-tape? Oh my God, that's so cool. I just wanted to ask you about that. So that was another Wendy.
Yeah.
You played Wendy on shelved. And I'm going to be honest, I don't like to leave any stone unturned when I'm doing an interview. I think you've seen that. So the other night I was like, well, it's 2 a.m, but I've got to watch shelved. But then I couldn't stop watching it. It's so great. I thought you were fantastic in it.
Thank you.
Your character's name is Wendy, and Shelved is just a wonderful unhoused Wendy Brown, a regular library patron and self-described wackadoo. And it's just all about this sweet protagonist who is trying to keep afloat a public good, a cash-strapped library in Toronto's gritty Parkdale neighborhood where patrons and staff from different backgrounds mix it up. What did you love about doing that show? Because I thought you were fantastic in it, and I thought it was fantastic.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was such a great show. It really could have used another season, you know, just to establish some more of the characters and the situation. Yeah, it was just a great show. But that character, Unhoused Wendy, was very challenging.
Yes.
And to play. So, you know, without making fun of unhoused people, how do you do that? And who was she? And I really had to think a lot about that. I made it so that she was in recovery or some kind of recovery so that she was struggling with that. And that was my through line. And that's how I identified with the character, because you have to find something to latch on to. So,
and you did your research. You spoke to women in that area and you spoke to women in similar positions and you talked to them and you did your research and you got, and I really felt that, not just in your costuming, but really just in your, you found a beautiful tone, a beautiful balance. And I just thought that was great. And I'm going to tell you a really sweet story I want to share with you.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do even more research to prepare for this interview today. So I reached out to my favorite contact, Claudette, at the Toronto Metro Reference Library. And this is what she said, and I quote, "Hi, Judy. Thanks for your email. I loved Shelved, not just because I'm a librarian who has worked at the Parkdale branch, but because I'm a huge fan of Robin Dukes and have loved her since SCTV."
Oh, my heavens.
Isn't that lovely?
So lovely. Yeah. Thank you, Judy, for that.
Yeah, I just thought, I love that.
Good heavens.
All right. So we got to talk about the Wendy thing. And okay, so you play character's name Wendy, We talked about Wendy Weiner. We talked about Wendy at, you know, of course, in Schitt's Creek, and Wendy and Shelved, right?
Mm-hmm.
So first, let me ask you, do you by any chance know the origin of the name Wendy?
No. I have a cousin. My first cousin's name is Wendy.
Yeah.
So I'm sure she's like really confused that all my characters Wendy. You know, Wendy Weiner, of course, was an alliteration, and that was really the only person that I thought of that name for.
Yes.
So I don't know.
I researched the name Wendy, and it was evidently not always a real name, but it was invented by J.M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan, and he wrote Wendy in as a character. And I sort of wondered, does this name Wendy, which is such a whimsical name, does that name get chosen for you, or are you chosen for Wendy? And by the way, what does Wendy mean? It means friend, and references in Peter Pan to your darling Wendy feeling young forever. And Robin, you are forever young, and I feel like you are everyone's friend.
Oh,
so I just thought it was so curious, you know, that this name that you've played so many times. So then I said to myself and to my team, Robin, am I overthinking this? Has this endless research made me lose my mind? But it just struck me as an interesting thing that Wendy means friend. You are the friend. And it also means you're forever young, which relates, of course,
that.
To your...
I'd like to think that is true.
Yeah,
and I
do
take
too.
And I that away with me and change my name, Robin.
I love that.
Legally.
you never stop reinventing yourself. And your brainchild, Fully Women Clothed, is sensational. And you and founding members, Jane Eastwood, who I interviewed many years ago on my TV show, In the Spotlight, I'll tell you a cute story about her, Catherine Greenwood and Teresa Pavlenek, are incredible. Can you tell us about your inspiration and how Women Fully Clothed all evolved? We're going to hear all about that when we come back after this short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hey everyone, we're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740. And just before the break, Robin, I was asking you about how Women Fully Clothed all evolved.
Oh, there's so many paths to Women Fully Clothed, that that creation. But I think I had done a similar thing with Catherine O'Hara, Maggie Butterfield, Andrea Martin, and Mary Charlotte Wilcox. And we had done these 2 weeks at Second City, where we just took old Second City scenes and changed the parts, male parts to women parts. It wasn't that difficult to do. And we did a run of 2 weeks, and it was so much fun. And we had such a great show then, and I always wanted to recreate that. Mm-hmm. And finally, I had some time. I'd gotten home from LA, and I was going out for auditions. I wasn't getting anything. And I thought, what is it that I like? What do I love? I love to be on stage, surrounded by like-minded people, getting laughs. And how do I do that?
Yeah.
How do I recreate what I had done years ago with those gals? So I put some feelers out. Fortunately, my now agent, Carly Baxter, got the idea. She understood it.
Oh.
And she said, we have this performance brunch coming up, a Mother's Day brunch. Pull some women together, do a show for this Mother's. So that's when I called Teresa, Kathy, Jane. I initially called Janet Vandegraaff. She couldn't do it. So then Deb McGrath came on board.
Nice.
And we put together this Mother's Day brunch. And we knew immediately it was one of those things that had a light around it.
Yeah.
And we knew right away, this is something that could be done. So we pursued it and went forward with it, wrote our own material. Michael Gritt at the Sanderson Theater offered us a night there, gave us 9 months to get ready
and
to birth this baby. And we performed our first show at the Sanderson Center in, I think, 2004.
No kidding.
20 years ago.
And you just, the other night, and I wish I'd known about it because I would have been there, you did it again in Oakville. And this was a week ago, a few days ago. What was that like?
Oh, it was fantastic. I can't. And we haven't done it since before COVID. We were in the process of writing a new show when COVID hit. So what we did was a mix of old scenes and new scenes. And then we updated some of the old scenes. And we went out, and it was an audience that was so receptive. A lot of our friends were there, I have to say. And so that didn't hurt. And it was just great to be together on stage with those gals and just having fun. I mean, people can see how happy we are. And I think that is contagious.
It is. It is. Because you're doing what you were meant to do in the best way. It's not even with cameras. It's that live performance that you so love with like-minded, funny people that you're close to. I mean, it just doesn't get any better, right?
It doesn't.
What's next for Women Fully Clothed?
Well, we're going to have a meeting tomorrow to figure all that out.
Awesome.
And maybe to book some more theaters. And, you know, we do all of that with the help of my husband and business associate.
Nice.
But we do all of that ourselves. You know, we book, we promote, we sell the tickets.
Wow.
Except Oakville, they asked us to do it. But usually we do it on our own. And right.
That is so awesome. So I tell you about Jane Eastwood. I interviewed her on my television show In the Spotlight years ago. And I did, you know, not a long intro like I did for you. It was TV and it had to be a little bit shorter. But I did a bit of a long intro on In the Spotlight. And I'll never forget when she said, "Nice intro, Judy. I'd forgotten it actually worked so much." You can hear her saying it, right?
Oh, she is so good.
Yeah, she's
funny.
She's another lifelong bestie, I think.
Oh,
am I right?
Yeah.
She's a great,
we call each other mother now. How are you, mother?
I love
we
it.
We call each other mother. I don't know. It started and we can't, because I guess because we're the senior members of Women Fully Clothed.
Oh, that's the best. That's the best.
Mother.
You've had a very cool gig that you just gave up after 19 years. You were a professor at Humber College. You taught comedy writing, improv, sketch, lots of comedy classes, all of it. What did you love the most? And that's a very long gig, 20 years. What did you love the most about teaching comedy, and what are your fondest memories?
Well, I would certainly say I loved laughing. You know, at the end of the day, students made me weep with laughter. Aww. and they could make me cry with laughing. And that was the best. And I'm not an easy laugh.
Yes.
You know, and I was very, you know, I would watch them more than laugh.
Yes.
When something hit me, there are just some things that, you know, that still stay with me about laughter in the classroom. I loved that.
They must have loved that, to get Rob and Duke to laugh at their material. Well, that's kind of like getting Joe Flaherty to laugh at your stuff,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
That's fabulous.
I hope so. I hope so. And I like to see how successful they are now. And when I do see them or run into them, they all change so much, their faces and they're unrecognizable sometimes. Then they have kids and
you're like, what happened? When teaching people how to do improv or how to do sketch comedy, you often say research it. Like if you're playing a doctor, use words like stethoscope or lab coat or surgical mask to help you get into character. Can you say more about what's involved for any budding improv people out there in building a character and sketch?
Well, I would just say observe people around you. Start with the people that are closest to you. Mm-hmm. And who are they? How do they react to situations? What are their habits? What are their wants? What do they want out of a situation? What's their agenda? Yeah. Start just observing people. Observe people in a coffee shop.
Yes.
You know, I saw these women one time and they were all sitting together and I watched. They all had those, you know, the brimmed hats, and they'd obviously been out walking. And as people, women particularly, came into the coffee shop, their heads would always turn and look up and down at whoever walked in.
I love it.
I know.
I love it.
You know, who's that? What are they? It was just. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's just a moment that you can capture and use.
Yeah. Nice.
I don't know if I've ever used it, but it's just something that
you'll use it now. You'll use it
now. Yeah.
You know, improv is so important for actors and for artists, but I think improv can also help regular folk just doing it.
Yeah.
So what are some tips? People are very shy to do it. They're scared to do it. Improv is going out on a limb. Like, I'm so impressed that you do this. There's no lines. You're out there.
But I always feel if you follow the rules, then you'll be successful. That's mm-hmm. like in life, I suppose. But just agree.
Yeah.
Just agree and say yes. There's this woman, I can't remember her name. She put out this great book called Improv Wisdom. And she talks about throughout the day, just agree with everybody and justify it.
Wow.
Instead of like our instincts and our inclination is to block, to say no. And immediately we'll say no.
Yeah, you're right.
And then think about it. Instead, say yes.
Yes.
And find a reason to say yes. And she gave this example of somebody who offers you a pie. And she said, if you can't eat pie, you're off sugar, whatever. Take the pie. Say thank you.
Yes.
My son will love this. Rather than our instincts is, no, I can't. You know, I can't eat
yeah,
pie.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
Take the pie.
Take the pie. You can give the pie to someone. You can give it to your son who would love. That's so smart.
Isn't that the best?
That's
and
great.
And try to do that. Try to say, I mean, it's impossible. I've tried. I get about, you know, I might get to 11 in the morning with my family.
And those yeses start to wane a little bit. Robin, you're writing a book called My Funny Life and Improvising Through It that's coming out in 2024 or thereabouts.
I keep changing the date. Soon to be released.
Can you tell us more about it?
It's basically this, yeah.
Yeah.
And improvising through it and how I've used the rules of improv. And I've done a couple of speaking gigs doing this and have really enjoyed that and just taking it out and talking to groups of people. And I found this great person who did a PowerPoint for me on my last one. Oh, and it's really been fun.
Will you come back on the show when the book is here and tell us all about it?
I will, Judy, and you'll have to read it first.
Can I tell you something? I read every word. And as a matter of fact, I just had on Jeannie Becker. Not only did I read her new book, Heart on My Sleeve, I'm actually going to see her perform it tonight, but I listened to the Audible. And I would say do the Audible in your wonderful, warm, inimitable voice, because it's so lovely when you're older to have the reading and the listening.
Yes.
So when you can't see a few words because it's late at night and the light is dim, you know, you got the nice Audible, right?
Audible changed my life. Audible books totally changed my life.
So great. I want to share another beautiful quote from our supervising producer, who I know you know, Mag Ruffman. And I called her in Australia. Yeah, I made sure the timing was okay. And I called her in Australia and asked her for a quote about you. Oh. And this is what she said. The thing I admire most about Robin's journey is that she has stayed kind. She's a fantastic performer, an incredible businesswoman, a very successful entrepreneur, and yet she has also kept her kindness, her consideration for others, and her gentleness. I think this is an extremely rare combination and a sublime accomplishment.
Oh my God, that's beautiful. That's lovely. Gee.
So yeah, I had to share that.
To live up to.
I just want to ask you before we close, a couple of final things, but just at the end of the day, because there's something that drives you, even though you're chill about it, and you are chill about it somehow. You found that perfect combination of drive and yet being chill while you do it. But what do you love the most about performing, about being on that stage?
I think I like the laughs, but I like the identifying laughs where you're giving something of yourself, you're revealing something of yourself, and the audience is identifying. They're going, that's me. I have that too. That's happened to me. I know that feeling. I know that person, whatever. So yeah, it's those identifying laughs that I like to get on stage.
What is bliss for Robin Duke?
What is bliss? Oh, golly. What is bliss? Oh, golly. Thrifting. Going to Value Village and thrifting. That's a whole other book.
Oh. What's been one of your favorite finds? I'm sure there's many, but what's been one of your finds that you went ape over?
Golly, let me. Recently, I think I've found some gems, and I have to look them up. They're blue. It's a necklace. I'm pretty sure it's a silver necklace, but it feels heavy. And when you look through the light at the stones, I think they're very valuable.
God, that's so fun. I love that too. That's so fun.
I like to think that.
Robin, I have to tell you, it's truly been an honor to have you here today. I can't believe our time is over, but it's been very wonderful, and I thank you.
Thank you for all your work, your research. My heavens, that's tremendous. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I can't wait to see Women Fully Clothed, and I can't wait to see the book. And
you're on my list of my guest list for the next one for sure.
That would be lovely. What is the best way for people to get in touch with you, contact with you, connect with you on social media, Instagram, Facebook, whatever?
Instagram, Facebook.
all the rest.
Shouldn't I? Instagram or Facebook.
That's awesome. Right. Don't go anywhere, but I want to thank you again.
Thanks,
we're all in heaven. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Robin Duke, who is living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we would love to hear from you. We also love to feature singer-songwriters on the show. If you're a singer, please reach out to us. And also, what did you love about today's show? Doy, that's obvious. Are there any guests or topics that you would love us to feature on Finding Your Bliss? Write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. For those of you who don't know, I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means I can help you gain clarity, find your passion and purpose. Reach out to me at findingyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And of course, you can always follow us at the Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, Robin Duke, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Meg Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, Associate Producer Eva Shabbatai, Associate Producer Olivia Vigiani, Audio Engineer Juliana Annunziello, Senior Editor Lauren Kaminsky, Video Editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, Audio Producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrach, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.